Hey, this is LaVon Shields, president of Management Consultants of America. And if you want to learn the 6- and 7-figure science to success, significantly increase your revenue, and learn how to successfully build professional relationships, you should be listening to the Sell Without Selling podcast with my good friend, Stacey O'Byrne.
If you're ready to get out of your own way to follow the 7-figure science of success, then welcome to Sell Without Selling. Tune in with renowned international speaker Stacey O'Byrne as she shows you how mastering relationships, achieving the proper mindset, and attaining the necessary motivation will catapult you away from failure and onto your journey to greatness. And now, here is your host, Stacey O'Byrne.
Hi, I'm Stacey O'Byrne, and I get to hang out with successful entrepreneurs, business owners, sales professionals, and some of the top business influencers and thought leaders in the world. You see, I believe that it's important to learn the art and science of how to sell without selling, and that is the only way to achieve 6- and 7-figure success. So, if you want to be a success magnet, attract quality people in your network, and significantly increase your sales and ultimately your success, then you're in the right place, because this is the Sell Without Selling podcast. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Sell Without Selling. I'm your host, Stacey O'Byrne, and today I'm speaking with a really good friend of mine, LaVon Shields. LaVon Shields is the CEO of Management Consultants of America as a business accountability coach and an accounting strategist. LaVon specializes in training and consulting business owners to help them gain peace of mind and relieve stress associated with running a company, all while improving their bottom line. LaVon uses her expertise to help engage business owners in all facets of their company, including financial management. She serves as a business consultant and trainer for the Inland Empire Women's Business Center and the Inland Empire Small Business Development Center. I'm so excited for you to hear today's conversation with LaVon. She has so many golden nuggets to share with you on how to increase your sales, increase your profitability, how to be successful, and just all in all, how to be accountable to your numbers. This is going to be an awesome conversation, and I'm so excited to get into it. Really quick, if you're a business owner, entrepreneur, or sales professional, and you haven't hit the level of success that you've always wanted or needed, or if you are stuck in needing a pivot in your business, in your success, or you just want more, and you understand the importance of having a coach to help identify the blind spots, increase your accountability, and help with success strategies to take you and your business, your income, and your success to the next level. If this sounds like something for you, then head over to pivotpointadvantage.com/iwantsuccess. That's pivotpointadvantage, pivotpointadvantage.com/iwantsuccess. There's a quick application there that will lead to a phone call with me to see if we are a great fit for each other. Okay, so enough of that.
Welcome to the show, LaVon. Thanks for coming on.
No, thanks for having me. Excited.
So, you know, I'm really excited about our listeners getting to meet you because you are one dynamic business owner and entrepreneur. I know that I shared with you a rundown of what today's going to be like, and we're going to really get deep into business and sales and everything like that. I'm really curious, though. What's something that people seem to misunderstand about you?
Outside of wanting to be a dancer, I thought that I was going to be a dancer when I was growing up. I love music, and I really thought that was going to be my pathway. And lo and behold, I'm an accountant of all things. Like, how far can you be on that one? The other one is that I'm really kind of laid back. I guess you kind of got to get to know me a little bit. I know my niece loves when new people meet me. She goes, I just want to see if they're going to get the humor in it and be able to roll with it. So she likes to watch. But that would probably be the biggest kind of misperception possibly.
That's awesome. When I first met you, you came across so quiet, so reserved that I felt a level of intimidation by you. And I don't really get intimidated very much by people, having been in the Army. When I meet people, I learned that people show up how they show up. And the more I got to know you, the more I absolutely fell in love with you. You are just a very dynamic person who, you're funny as heck. So yeah, I'm blessed you're in my life. I'm blessed that I've gotten to know you. And I had no clue you wanted to be a dancer. What kind of dancer?
Contemporary and hip hop.
Contemporary.
I love telling stories through music, through movement. So whenever I hear music, that's the first thing that I interpret is what would the performance of that be like? It's weird, but it's my quirk and I love it.
So that leads me to asking, what's your go-to song?
Oh, wow. Okay. So it changes. it changes on what's going on. I mean, Legendary is always there. That one found me in a great space to allow me to share it with a lot of people like my son and then things like that. But it all depends. I have playlists for my mood. I can be on one song on repeat for like 3 or 4 months just because that whatever that message is and vision that I have of it is ingrained so deep into me. So right now I'm doing, it's called Bird Fly Free or something. Bird Set Free by Sia. I heard it out of the blue one night. My middle son was listening to a Saturday night replay or something, and she was the performer. And I was like, okay, I got to get that song. It's been on repeat for the last couple, but it all depends on my mood because it might be one. There's one song that I go to. It's called Beast. It came off of the Southpaw soundtrack.
Yep.
Yeah, so you know that song.
Yep.
So that one goes in there sometimes when I got to get myself ready.
Yeah, that's awesome. Every time I hear Legendary, I think of you. Every time. Now, every time I hear Beast, I'm going to think of you. That's awesome. So, you know, I've always been curious, and this is one of my favorite questions to ask people. Who's your hero?
I have heroes. So when I saw this one, it was one of those realizations. I have several because I've been blessed to have amazing people in my life who have given me nuggets that I've been able to incorporate into who I am. I mean, from my parents, my dad, my grandparents, my grandfather, my very first lesson that I learned from him was find the thing you love to do. You never have to work a day in your life. That has been my foundation for life. And each person that has come in has always given me something to grow with. I can't pinpoint one person or one thing. You're one of my heroes in all honesty. It's the people that I have come embrace me and allow me to be a part of their lives, and they're a part of my lives. They all become kind of my heroes, what I look up to in certain different areas of life. So I have heroes.
I like that. That's awesome. I think one of my favorite speeches ever was Matthew McConaughey's Oscar acceptance speech.
Oh, yeah. When you played that one, that was awesome.
When he talks about his hero and he had to really think about it, and his answer was me in 10 years. Mm-hmm. And then 10 years later, someone asked him, are you your hero yet? And he goes, no way. No way. Mm-hmm. My hero is always 10 years out because that's always who I'm chasing. That just hit me to my core. Absolutely. That's fantastic.
That was a beautiful one.
Yeah. He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing. He's on my goals list to get on this show.
Awesome.
I know, right? If you could give your teenage self any advice, what would you say to yourself? And I'm going to warn our listeners now, I'm very afraid.
I mean, knowing that what's going to come is coming, know what I know now, I'd be like, just brace, this shit's going to get crazy. But you're going to make it. That would probably be it. Knowing where I was at a teenager, I mean, that was a crazy time. I mean, I got pregnant at 16 with my oldest son. It was a dynamic shift. But at the same time, that was when I was doing a major transition of not being just kind of in the shadow and kind of rolling with what everybody did. This was for high school. I had broken away from doing what everybody else did. My brother went to one school. My sister went to the same one, but then she transferred. So from where I grew up, it was like only a couple places that you could go. And I broke out and decided to go to a school for the arts and sciences so I could pursue dance as my passion. But at the same time, I had also been working in an office. So I had a passion for business work, business environment. So I would tell my younger one that it's going to freak you the hell out and you're not going to know what the hell is going on. But in the end, it's all going to lead to who you're supposed to be. And it's going to be freaking awesome.
That's awesome. Our listeners are solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, business owners, sales professionals, you know, pretty much the market that you cater to. Yeah. We both have very, very similar clientele and prospective clientele. What's the best advice you can give someone who hasn't achieved the success that they want yet?
Great. I love that question. First, it would be, who's defining success for you? Is it your definition? Because if you're chasing something that's not yours, you're not going to get it. I had a trainer I was working with, and I said, hey, I want to, over a year's period of time, I want to get my body to this level. Oh, we can do that in 3 months. Like, that's not my goal. I don't want to do that. And I don't think you want me coming to workouts with the desire of hitting you with a dumbbell in the face. We should probably go with my goal, because my goal is about developing a habit and slowly getting into it and doing the things that I like. So that was a big thing that I realized, that it has to be your definition of success. It has to be yours. And so if you haven't reached a level, it's the question is, and whose measuring tape are you using? That would start there. And then the other one is, do you know your why? I mean, which kind of goes into, you know, who's defining it. But if you don't know why you're doing it, then you're never going to feel like you actually hit success. So there's people who make millions of dollars and they don't feel like they are successful yet. And I'm like, based off of what? Whose measuring stick are you doing? And if you're doing the thing you don't enjoy doing, then of course you're never going to feel like you're successful. So it would be that. It would, who's defining it, and do you know why you want it?
I love that. You know, one of the biggest mistakes that I see most people do is their definition of success is too ambiguous. You know, the unconscious mind is incapable of achieving ambiguity. It just can't do it. And that's what sets so many up to fail. When you start working with a client and they start talking about the levels of success that they dream of, desire, and feel like they deserve, how do you help them really get specific?
I start with the kind of a basic conversation and hear what they're saying. I love that I've gone through this training with you, because it's so amazing how people communicate and the way that they communicate. So I kind of just let them ramble, because they start with wanting to say so much, because they usually, when they get to me, it's either dire or they're ready for this next step. So they want to move really fast. So either way, there's excitement, you know, whether it be, you know, quote unquote, negative or positive, there's some level of adrenaline rush going in there. Mm-hmm. So when they get to talking to me, I just let them talk, because out of that, then I'm able to pull. So do you mean this? So is this what you're looking for? So that way it kind of helps guide them. Because in many situations, and I love this quote, it comes from Michael Gerber, most businesses are started by technicians who are having an entrepreneurial seizure. So they got into
something.
Yeah, they know how to do something, or people told them, like, hey, you will be great at this. You're a great chef. You should sell this, or you're good at that. So they do it. Mm-hmm. And if they've put themselves in good positions kind of haphazardly, then they will become somewhat successful. But if there's no transition or shift in the mindset and how they look at their business, then they don't really make it to that next level of being able to literally, you know, run whatever their definition of it, but it's not really something that they're running and managing and work with. Yeah. So when I'm listening to them, I'm helping them, kind of put in place what their goals are, because a lot of times they haven't even thought about it in that standpoint. It's just to be able to make payroll this week, or, you know, it's usually something so immediate that they haven't got a chance to go that 2, 3, 4, 5 years out and see what they want. Mm-hmm. And that conversation is allowing them to put it out there. I'm just really the brain dump receiver, so I can put it out and say, okay, so is this what you want? And then they go, yeah, that's what I want. And so then now it's, do you want me to hold you accountable for that?
I love that. I love that. So why do you think most entrepreneurs, business owners, and sales professionals fail or don't succeed?
They don't really know what they're hitting. I mean, like you said, it's just so ambiguous. There's no actual goal that they're shooting for. It's just, oh, I want to do this because I want to make more money. Well, what is that definition? Mm-hmm. And so then if you don't have the goal that you're shooting for, then how do you know what steps you're supposed to be taking? So in many situations, I mean, I love the serial entrepreneur, the ones who are successful. And then when they see that they are successful, they're comfortable with moving on to the next thing. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. But it's another one when you just keep popping up businesses here and there because none of them have hit any level of success. Mm-hmm. That means you don't really have a goal. You're not really shooting for anything. So yeah. it's usually, from what I see, it's based off of that. That and it's based off of, again, it's someone else's goal. Oh, you should reach this level. You should do this way. So you don't really, you're pushing against it because it's not really what you want. And so if you don't really know what you're shooting for, then how will you know you've hit it, or how will you know that you're not hitting it?
Yeah, you know, when I helped teach entrepreneurs, salespeople, and business owners how to leverage relationships and reciprocity and convert it to revenue. When I taught them how to network, I found out that most not only approach their business, but they approach almost every professional area with the philosophy of ready, shoot, aim. You know, they just spray and pray. Or a friend of mine, one of her favorite phrases, and I absolutely love it, is they show up and throw up. And very few really take the time to figure out where they're starting and where they want to go and to put together an action plan to make it really easy to get there. So, you know, I brought up networking. As you know, I've built a couple 7-figure businesses and multiple very high 6-figure businesses, 100% from networking and word of mouth marketing. I'm curious, what is networking to you?
I look at it as building relationships. It's meeting people and establishing connections, because you never know where they're going to lead to, but it's about that. That's how I've always viewed it, is this is getting the opportunity of just connecting with people. I mean, you can find someone that can help you with your business, help you with your personal, help you help someone else. You never know. So it's just about taking the opportunity to go out and meet people and develop your relationship.
So tell me about a time when a connection to someone led to a big opportunity for you.
It's a good one, because my entire business is built off of the connections that I make with people. When I first launched my business, I attempted my version of marketing. it didn't turn out right. My ability to put my message of what I do on paper or in some sort of non-direct, you get to know me format never turned out well. Mm-hmm. So everything has been about the connections that I make. So, well, I guess to put it in one way, it would be the connections that I made with Michelle Skilgen at the Women's Business Center, and then with the director at the Small Business Development Center. They have allowed me to teach and to be a part of their expert community. So people get to see me in front of them, talking to them, see all of this in the way that it is, and decide, like, you know what? She's just my kind of crazy. I think I can work with that. So they see it. So it allows me to develop relationships and then get clients. And that's been how my business has grown, is just being able to be in a real situation with people where they show up. I know how to adjust how I show up to fit them, but it's still fully me. So it's all of every connection that I make is always gives me the opportunity to build, because it is about that connection, being able to connect with people. Mm-hmm. But the Women's Business Center and the Small Business Development Center, those have probably been the most powerful connections that I have had.
Nice. So what exactly do you teach there?
It started off where I was just teaching QuickBooks, the basics of getting into QuickBooks. But what I learned is that people still don't understand what it does. So I can teach you how to use it, but if you're not comprehending what it does, then that doesn't help you. That's how you end up with books that make no sense. That's how you end up with stuff where you can't do anything with it. So I also branched out into teaching basically small business accounting and what it does. So I layered a couple different trainings that allow the business owner to connect the numbers actually to their business and understand how it really is just putting what you do with a dollar value in front of it. That way you can make better decisions about it. But it's basically small picture or big picture. It's small business accounting. So we have a class that's actually that I teach that I love that's getting some really good feedback on, is accounting for the non-accountant. So it's where I break down what do the numbers actually mean into real terms that meet business owners where they are in their technician stage, and then show them how to use that information to become actual business owners, CEO.
Nice. So off the wall question, kind of a loaded question. How's that? Do you think that business owners, entrepreneurs should do their own books, do their own accounting?
So that, what a loaded question. cutting you the way that I know you. That was a good one. You just popped that one right up. Okay. So in reality, because what I do is based off of them not doing it themselves, the, you know, part of me says, no, you should never do it yourself. Right. However, it's really one of those situations where I tell people, when it's no longer the highest and best use of your time to do this, then that's when you need to hire someone to do it. And that fits for every area of business. I mean, when we start off, we're wearing every hat, unless mm-hmm. we can't afford to hire someone to do it because we know that's a no-go. But you're wearing every hat. So at some point, in order for you to grow, you have to take some stuff off your plate. You have to. So when the managing the day-to-day of the numbers is no longer the highest and best use of your time as an entrepreneur, as a business owner transitioning into a CEO, mm-hmm. then that's when you want to bring someone in. That's why I focus when I work with my clients. I tell them, and after going through training, is when I realize that it can't be just a jump in situation. So I even transition my services to where we have a 90-day kind of dating period. It's not just for us trying to figure out if we can work together. We're developing the system. So if you have the capability to be able to manage it, mm-hmm. then you can. It's set up for you to do it. If you can manage it but don't want to, then you can drop me or anyone else into it for it, because now you know exactly what you're looking for. So I realized it's to give the business owner the choice. I had one client where the managers, this is the part that she loved doing was this. And in the transition of her and in the management of her location, she realized, okay, so I need to be out more in the restaurant and engaging with people a little more. This is no longer really the highest and best use of my time. So we figured out which tasks she can do that give her, you know, some joy. You know, I don't want to take away anyone's joy. She mm-hmm. does her tasks. I come in and I do the next stage of it. So it's really about finding that dance. But it goes into when it's no longer the highest and best use of your time to do it, for you to run your enterprise, then that's when you should bring in some support.
So I know you're an accountant, and I know that I've gotten a little off track of what it is I shared with you that the rundown of the show was going to be. I just think this is really important for people to hear from every level of business, whether they're a business owner, an entrepreneur, a solopreneur, or even a sales professional. As an accountant, as somebody who really focuses on the numbers and the heart and the strength of business, what is it that you see most make as mistakes when it comes to the numbers and the accounting?
It's not developing that habit of managing it, just taking that time out. I mean, we say schedule your networking time. Mm-hmm. You schedule when you're going to actually perform your services or you know, do, you know, if you have a retail store, when you're actually open. Everything else is scheduled. Everything else, you put the time into it. But when it comes to the numbers, it's haphazard. So how can you expect money, energy, of what it is to be consistent if you're not paying consistent attention to it? Mm-hmm. So if you don't set up that system where you're able to drop into it and get out and, you know, get the information and then use that information, then how can you expect it to produce anything for you?
Right.
And so it's kind of difficult. So that's usually where it starts. So one of the things that I do with clients, I tell them, you know, we're going to meet where you are. I need you to get into the habit of saving the receipt, or I need you to get you into the habit of looking at where I'm putting the numbers. If QuickBooks is where we're recording everything, look at it consistently. Don't go to the bank. Don't look at the bank balance on your phone or online. Don't look at what your credit card balance is online. Go to QuickBooks first if we're current in that, because that's going to tell you exactly what it is you need to do, mm-hmm. as well as give you all the other information. So it's a habit. It's all about making this a part of the regular routine. And if you don't, then that's how you end up being someone who's putting your financials together on March 14th for a March 15th tax file. It's mm-hmm. that's how it happens. So it's the habit. It's add the numbers to the rest of what you do. Schedule it. Make some time for it.
Yeah, working with these prospective clients, potential clients, and clients that are, you know, business owners, sales professionals, entrepreneurs, even the solopreneurs, I find that it's usually an either or. They are either operationally strong or they're sales strong. Mm-hmm. Rarely do you find them that are both, right? Mm-hmm. Like you had brought up Gerber's quote, most of them are technicians, they're experts of their industry, which then has them focusing on working in their business instead of on their business. And then you have those people who are operationally strong, run everything by the numbers, and then forget to grow the business. And then you have those who are, they love sales, they love meeting people, they make it rain, so to speak. And then when you ask them what their P&L is or what their bottom line is, they kind of look at you like Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as it comes to sales, what's the difference between selling and closing to you?
My first reaction of closing was always that it was negative. Like it was that, okay, let me push them into the next thing. But it's what I've learned is that it's just a process. It's a process. So everything should have a start and an end. So the sales is the initial gauging and communication process of, do we agree on what it is that I'm offering and what it is you're willing to pay for it? And closing is actually literally saying, okay, so we've ended this part of our communication. Now mm-hmm. we know exactly what we're moving forward to. But in the past, it was, you know, the closing was that car salesman who's like, you know, just throwing it at you and, you know, making you have to do it. Or there was a lender who we were trying to negotiate terms with one of my clients, and we were saying, hey, we need the money for payroll. And then we realized the terms weren't good. He's like, well, if you don't want to, you know, if you don't want to make sure your employees get paid, then, you know, of course you'll say no. I was like, wow. That was a bad close, dude. That's just not going to get what you want.
Right, right.
And I said it. I was like, yeah, that one's not a good one. You might want to revisit the way you transition the conversation, because that didn't work. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is that it's a part of that transition part. People can have long-term sales conversations and never really say, okay, so we're going to work together. Here is where we've agreed to it. And that task is now done. Now we're into the working together part.
You know, prospective clientele have gotten very smart. You know, technology has really opened the information floodgates. So by the time they are engaging with you, by the time they're standing in front of you, they already know they're buying. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of with who. And I think that today's prospective client really doesn't want to be sold. They really want to buy. So I think the role of a salesperson has really changed. We're more educators. We're more information providers. We're more solution identifiers. And I think that we get to move someone through their decision-making process to help them into making their decision with the right expert. And I think that's the role we get to play today. I really do. What do you wish you had known when you started out? Other than busting a move.
It would have been to comprehend marketing. I saw it as just kind of one thing of general visibility, and I didn't connect the relationship building part of it to it. And I wish I'd have known that sooner, so that I could have known earlier, you know, taken the development classes and the skills training that I've done to really, you know, develop relationships with people. So if I'd have focused on that aspect of marketing earlier, that probably would have been the biggest difference in my business and its growth stages. I would have been to change what I thought of marketing and really, you know, focus on what I do is relational, and to have focused on my marketing in that vein of relationship building earlier.
What's the biggest mistake you ever made, and what did you learn from it? Oh, I know. I warned you that there was going to be some vulnerability level here, right?
Oh, wow. I mean, several. I don't know if I can say that one was the biggest. Because the biggest mistakes that I have made have been in choosing the wrong clients.
Okay.
Choosing to just take anyone who was willing to pay. And as long as it gave me the chance to do the work, then I was okay with that. But not learning soon enough that I don't have to work with just anybody, that I could protect myself and my business and my emotions and my sanity by choosing who I wanted to be in this relationship with. Mm. And I learned that late in several situations that really kind of kind of hit hard. One of the relationships was one of my main client at the time. And I didn't learn early enough that I could let that go so I could get the right client in that place. Mm-hmm. And that was probably the biggest thing is learning, you know, you get to choose. You don't have to take anyone who's willing to pay you.
Yeah.
You to choose this. And if you're going to do this thing that you love, then you're probably going to want to do it with people that you enjoy spending the time with and doing the work with. That would probably be the biggest series of mistakes that I had made to get to that point of, oh, I get to choose. It is my choice. Choice is a powerful thing. Suffering is always
my favorite quote ever. Yeah.
That would probably be the biggest one.
You know, I have found that my biggest mistakes, and trust me when I tell you I've made some doozies, my biggest mistakes have been the most incredible gifts that have provided the most incredible stepping stones to create the successes that I've managed to enjoy. And although during the time of experiencing them, it was extremely painful, I can look back on it and be appreciative that it presented itself in my life.
Yeah.
What has been your number one key to success?
My passion. I truly love what I do. To get up every day and have the ability to do it has been it. That being said, it's also been what I use as my tool with my kids, my sons when they were growing up. You know, the biggest, to be able to be the best example to them. And my whole thing was, you got to love what you do. It's going to be your life. You got to be able to do it your way. So the best way for me to do that would be to show it. Mm-hmm. Show when it's great, you know, awesome. When it's not so great, what do you do? And make sure you have something you can go back to, which would be the passion. Mm-hmm. So that would probably be it. I mean, just from what I hear from my clients and the what they tell me about their experience with me, that my passion does show in the work that I do. So that would probably be the biggest thing for me. Mm-hmm.
Did your sons follow suit? Are any of them entrepreneurs, business owners?
They've all had their kind of version of a hustle, a little side hustle thing going on. that I can tell. My oldest one, he's military. That's what he wants his career to be. But they've always had some kind of little side deal to it. My youngest one, he used to, when he was in high school, he would do custom shoes. So that was his thing. So they all have their own little twerk on it. And I think my youngest one is probably the one that has the most drive to become a business owner. I mean, he changed his major to communication because he said, I realize I want to focus on message, but that didn't just change his desire to want to launch a business. He just knew he wanted to really learn communication skills. Mm-hmm. But he's probably the one that is going to be business minded and really focus on business with what he does.
I'm curious, because you are an accountability coach and an accounting strategist, how important is coaching and mentorship to an entrepreneur, to a solopreneur, to a business owner, or a sales professional who wants to achieve levels of success that they never have in the past?
I think it's essential. That was another thing that I kind of picked up early on was that I got to see mentorship with my dad and with the mentors he followed and the people who followed him as mentors. I think that that's the crucial part of it, is being able to find someone, whether they know you're following them or not. You can read biographies of people, but to find something to grasp onto, to chase. I mean, a lot of times in our head, we see the vision of what we want, but we don't see a pathway. We don't see where it goes. So to be able to see where someone says, hey, there's a quicksand over here, so you might want to avoid it if possible, kind of thing. Or over here, this is where you're going to see, you know, this opportunity, and then you want to take it. To be able to have something to follow along, mm-hmm. and then also leave breadcrumbs for the person behind you, I think that's important. That's the only way, to me, that you can have global expansion of success. I mean, people need to follow something and have something to follow. I think it's crucial to have mentors and to be a mentor.
Nice. What's the difference between mentorship and coaching for you?
Me personally, I would see them as synonymous. I would use them the same way. It's going to be in the use of the person who's being the mentor or the coach, how they take that role and that power of being trusted by someone to be guided. But to me, they're kind of synonymous. It's you can't coach someone without mentoring them in some area, whether it be mentally, emotionally, and the skill set itself. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can be mentored without being coached to improve the technique or whatever it is that you're doing. So to me, I think they're synonymous. It's really all about how that relationship goes. But I think you kind of need them to be mixed in together.
I think the acts of mentorship and coaching are synonymous. However, I think they are two totally different roles for someone. A mentor is someone who has, in my opinion, someone who has something that you desire. They've achieved levels of success. They've achieved something that you want, and you have picked them to follow, whether it's taking in books that they've written or podcasts that they do, or you take golden nuggets with them and you apply them into your life. A coach, in my humble opinion, is a success partner. It's a partner who holds you accountable. It's a partner that helps expose blind spots. A mentor, in my opinion, has no direct interaction or detailed information about you. It's just someone who has represented something that you want, a level of success, and you take their knowledge that they give out to the masses and you consume it and implement how you filter it. Now, there are some mentors that do show up and say, go do this. When you do that, come back and I'll give you something else to do. I think a coach is intimately involved with their client and they understand all the nuances. They understand what makes the person tick and they kind of hold their hand. They use the philosophy of lead, pace, follow. Sometimes they take the lead role. Sometimes they follow the person and sometimes they stand by the side to hold them up because the Lord knows this can be exhausting. Entrepreneurs are the only people that will work 120 hours to avoid a 40-hour job. So although
I was like, ain't that the truth?
I know, right? So since you're talking about consuming a mentor's knowledge, how do you like to consume content? Do you like to consume it in books and blogs, podcasts, videos? How do you like to consume your personal and professional development? And tell me one of your favorites.
One of my favorite ways of doing it is as I do read, I like ebooks because I can open up another note app, like I read off of my iPad. Mm-hmm. iPad mini. So I'll open up a notepad app and I will, take information and pull it over. That allows me to engage it and do it well. I am growing to appreciate like audiobooks and to be able to hear it. I'm so used to just listening to music that I'm learning to appreciate just to be able to hear the words and be able to absorb them in. I'm a sucker for the workshop, just to be able to be in an environment with other people. So that way, if I don't grasp it a certain way, I can literally turn to my neighbor and go, what did she just say?
Not that I've ever seen that, ever.
Like, kind of thing. I love the interaction of being with other people and have a tribe of people who are all on the same journey. Mm-hmm. But in my quiet times, and it's kind of just me, my favorite is to be able to pull up a good book and open up that note app and like really absorb the information and use it immediately. I can literally take it and automatically drop it into whatever my other notes and systems are and then incorporate it real fast. So that's one of my favorite ways of like really devour it. That, and I don't have to worry about if people see what I'm wearing.
That's awesome. So, the name of my show is Sell Without Selling. I'm curious, what does sell without selling mean to you?
It's almost like an obvious. It's because the definition of sell has had such a negative connotation for so many people. Well, I know for me personally, for so long. It was something I actually fought for the longest. I had a good friend and sales coach, Ursula Minches, and you know her. She laughed at me one time. I was like, I can't stand the concept of selling. She was like, I don't know how that works.
I love Ursula.
I was like, I know, to be able to embrace it and realize that, I don't have to sell. Because it's not selling, it's really just having a conversation. So when you can have an authentic conversation with someone, in that conversation, you'll determine if there's something that's there. And then it's all about the relationship building after that. So to really kind of remove, I like that it almost removes the word sell from the process in a way, because it's sell without selling. So once you take it out and you realize, okay, so if it's without it, then what is in it? Because something's got to be in that space. And then the realization is that it's a conversation. That's really what it is. It's the opportunity to make a connection with someone. And if it turns that it will lead to a sale, great. And you don't know if that could lead to another sale based off of the communication they have with somebody else. So it's really about being able to say, you know, to determine, do you have a connection with somebody? And that's what I like. That's what really drew me into the, so I don't have to worry about being a salesperson, because I always thought it was a negative connotation to that one, which was why it was a fight for me to do it for so long. But to realize that it's just a matter of, I found someone, whether we met at a networking group or they referred to me, and they want to have a conversation. I can have a conversation. We can talk about what you need, and then we can determine if I'm a good fit, if you're a good fit for me, and we can go from there. And that's not hard. It's not as hard as I was making the process out to be. Mm-hmm. And it's actually kind of fun, because you're meeting new people and you're finding out new things about other parts of the world or other parts of business or different industries. You get to learn. So that's what I like about the concept of selling without selling. It's remove the need to just get the money and to focus on the people. These are people and having a relationship.
You know, for me, it's business owners, entrepreneurs, sales professionals, and even the solopreneurs, which, although I get that there are a lot of solopreneurs, you know, they're not alone. We can't do this alone, right? And, you know, I've heard phrases, I'm an opener or I'm a closer. And, you know, it's the understanding that our program dictates our abilities, our capabilities, and our beliefs and our value systems. And reality is this: where we go, we follow. So everywhere we go, we are there. And it's the awareness, the understanding that we are incapable of producing different results when we refuse to change the brain that created the results in the past. And sell without selling is an understanding that we have blind spots. We have limiting beliefs. We have money mindset, good or bad. We have values that we project that we don't even know. What we don't know that affect people. We have lack of tools, lack of skill sets, lack of knowledge. And when people realize where I go, I follow, the results I create are pretty much Groundhog's Day over and over again until we reprogram the one thing that is capable of achieving our success, and that's our brain. So who we are is exactly what we create. So many people show up from a foundation of faking it till they make it. And that is so incongruent. Right. So sell without selling for me is really the understanding of choice is a powerful thing. Suffering, always optional. I must maintain congruency. And I have an understanding that where I go, I follow. Right. So talking about blind spots, I believe that it's really important for anyone in a sales capacity to understand their blind spots in order for us to be able to be the best version of ourselves and show up in a state of excellence on a continual basis. We must know what they are. Another question. What are you not very good at? It's one of my other favorite questions.
So my father was an executive, and what I saw in him was he had great people who knew how to just kind of put him where they needed him to be at the right places and time. And I know for me, that's probably my biggest blind spot, because shiny things totally distract me. I mean, totally distracts me. I mean, it's really easy for me to be, I'm doing this, and then something, you know, I need to go put this over here. I need to go save this file here, and I go say, like, oh, well, look, that's there, and that's there. Well, I can organize that. Next thing you know, it's like, crap, I was just supposed to save the file. Save the file. How did you get that wrong? How did you let 15 minutes go by doing something else that's totally different? So for me, it's monitoring, you know, what I'm doing and realizing that, you know, you only have 24 hours in the day and sleep is necessary. So my ability to just, you know, like monitor my squirrel moments, that's the tough one for me. That's the one where I look up and say, this was not what I was supposed to be doing. I had a task list. There was stuff that I had assigned myself to do, and you didn't do hardly any of them. And so that's my big thing, is monitoring my squirrel moments.
Monitoring the squirrel moments. You do realize I will never be able to look at you the same again. I'm going to see these like cheeks. So what's one place that our listeners can find you online?
You can definitely find me on LinkedIn, and you can find me also on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Those are you can find me there. If you find me on Facebook, you can also look at my business page if you want to look at that one first. To see
what is your business page?
It's Management Consultants of America. So it is my corporate name. That's where you can definitely find me there. Those are the best places to find me because it gives people an opportunity to kind of gauge it. I'm not a big website person. To me, it's impersonal. And what I do is too personal to really focus on that one. It's really about the relationships that I make with people. So definitely look me up on LinkedIn. You can look me up on Facebook. That's the best ways to literally connect with me, because you are connecting with me and get a chance to get to know me and know that area, those circles.
That's fantastic. Your success is important to me, and it's also important to me to make sure that these episodes are valuable to you. I would love for you to do a few things right now. Head over to Instagram, like us and follow us at Pivot Point Advantage. We leave a lot of information on there. We interact. We are constantly posting, and I'd love to connect with you and follow you as well. And then next, I'd love for you to head over to Facebook and join our Sell Without Selling community. I'm in this community all the time. We have phenomenal, like-minded entrepreneurs in this community. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of engagement. There's a lot of interaction. I'm in it several times a day. You have my full attention. And then last, I'd love to chat with you. I want to personally chat with you, get feedback on the episodes, and find out any topics that you're interested in to help me make this more powerful and helpful to you achieving the success that you've always dreamed of, desired, and deserved. Head over to pivotpointadvantage.com/talktostacy. That's pivotpointadvantage.com/talktostacy. Let's get a 15-minute call on the schedule. Always remember this. Choice is a powerful thing, and suffering is always optional. Get out of your way so that you can get on your way, so that you can finally have your way. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
Whether it's mastering your mindset, communication, or success, we have more ways to keep you on your journey to greatness. Be sure to visit us at pivotpointadvantage.com for exclusive online training programs, success-specific courses, and more ways to connect to Stacy directly to help you achieve the financial success you've always desired, dreamed, and deserved. That's all available on pivotpointadvantage.com.